This is going to be my last Juma, which we are going to stay together this day during this visit. On this occasion, first of all, let me express my deep sense of gratitude towards my Lord, our Allah, who has shown mercy upon us, and particularly mercy upon this humble servant of his by making this trip meaningful and purposeful. I saw help coming from him from every direction, in every way. He is the master and the lord of the universe, so all our efforts can only bear fruit if he shows mercy. He has been very kind to us, and we hope that inshallah he will continue to be kind and merciful, forbearing and forgiving. After this, I express my gratitude to the England Jamaat for their kindness and hospitality, and a very generous hospitality for that, which is showed to me and to my companions, and also to all the rest of the visitors who came from all over the world. Everybody I know has gone back very happy. So shall we, and we'll be carrying sweet memories of this visit, which will inshallah keep turning into prayers, and I hope Allah will listen to those humble prayers of ours. Now I have to say a few odd things. I have jotted down a few diverse points to speak upon today. First of all, I want to say a few words about devotees of life who are serving here in various capacities. Those people who have offered their lives for the sake of Allah, they deserve special respect from the community and special help. They cannot become successful in the pursuance of their goal unless the entire community, entire Jamaat, puts in their effort towards achieve the achievement of that goal and help them. not only there, they should be shown special respect and kindness. I have noted with regret and with pain that in some places some people have not been kind to their missionaries. They have been very critical of their work, and so loudly critical and censuring that their sharp tongue cut deep into their hearts. And they felt the pain of it, although they didn't mention it in any way. Different people are made differently. They have different educational backgrounds. If somebody is not capable of addressing you in first-class English, it's not his fault. Maybe it's the fault of the system which brought him up. Maybe it's the fault of the schooling he has had. But there are so many factors involved that it's not for me to analyze them all here. But one thing I know, that someone, with whatever he has, if he has offered his life for the sake of Allah, he should be treated respectfully and kindly. And cooperation should be extended to him in all departments. Sometimes I know, not here, but it may happen everywhere in the world, that some people show kindness to a missionary, and then they think that by doing so, they have turned him into a personal slave. Now, this is the common tragedy we find in the rest of the Islamic world, vis-a-vis the mullah, which you find in the mosque, serving in the mosque, in the villages, particularly in the Punjab. There, the mullah is supposed to be a personal servant of all the big landlords of that community, because he is being fed by them. In what manner of feeding, there is no point to discuss it. But because he is ultimately kept alive at their arms, he is mistreated, he is insulted in everyday life. The only hold he has over the society is by way of creating hatred. Whenever he speaks of hatred for others, people follow him. Whenever he speaks of goodness and sacrifices for the sake of goodness, people desert him. That is the only relationship left now. We must not make it happen to our community. We have to go a very, very long way towards the final achievement of our goal. And the kind of missionary which has been created with the grace of Allah through Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam's direction is a very different type from the one you see. Many among them are those who devoted their lives after studying to the best of their capability. And they were left with two choices. Either they could pursue the worldly goal or offer their services for the sake of Allah. The same people, I know some of them, if they had pursued the world instead of joining Allah's forces, could have earned much more than those who think they are financially superior to them, so they can mistreat them. They could earn much more money, and they could have highly respectable places. They could live even better than many of the non-devotees can live. Yet they don't mind it, because they know their reward is with Allah. As far as they are concerned, I'm not bothered about them. I'm bothered about those who mistreat them, because they will fall under the wrath of Allah, because Allah does not like his people to be mistreated, those who have offered sacrifices for his sake. So be mindful of that. If you have shown some kindness to those missionaries, still it is for them to accept it or reject it. If they accept it, they are showing a good turn to you by accepting your kindness. They do not become your slaves if you have shown mercy towards them. secondly, do not judge Ahmadis harshly if they live decently. Now this is a very strange saying, but this is also true, that some people somehow become so strict and narrow-minded in their approach to life, that if an Ahmadi is living a normal, decent life, they become censorious, they become extremely stingy in their remarks about such a person. They feel that he is living a luxurious life, and they don't know the essence of what luxurious life is according to Islam, what is wrong in Islam and what is right in Islam. To enjoy the best things in life, provided that you remain within the four walls of prohibitions by Allah, is not at all forbidden. And provided that when asked for financial sacrifices, you remain in the forefront of those who sacrifice their earnings for the sake of Allah. So after that, what is left to you is completely your own choice how to spend it. If you live decently and nicely, it is not at all forbidden for you to live a decent life. What is forbidden has been made manifestly clear in the Holy Quran. So after that, nobody has a right to declare something forbidden which is not forbidden by the Holy Quran. This is what has been mentioned in this verse, قُلْ مَنْ حَرَّمَ زِينَةَ اللَّهِ الَّتِي أَخْرَجَ لِعِبَادِهِ مِنَ الطَّيِّبَاتِ وَمِنَ الرِّزْقِ قُلْ هِيَ لِلَّذِينَ آمَنُوا فِي الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا خَالِصَةً يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ. Say, who has forbidden the good things in life to Allah's servants, which He has created for their sake, for this life, as well as for the life to come? It says, for this life, they are for the believers, and for the life to come, exclusively for the believers. So Allah has created out of His love good things of life to be used, not to be abandoned by His people, by His two servants. So if they make use of these things, there is nothing wrong at all with it. And after this verse of the Quran, nobody on earth has a right to censure them for good living. Provided, as I have mentioned before, that they live within the four walls of Islamic dictates. Also provided that this living does not bar them from taking part in the sacrifices in the way of Allah. When we plead austerity, it is not because living a life of comfort is prohibited in Islam. It's only because if you can save more, you will be more able to serve the cause of Islam. That belongs to the region of nafl, as it said in Islam. Nafl is a term which means after doing the obligatory thing, if you do something of volition, that is nafl. So that pertains to the department of nafl. But even if somebody remains restricted to the department, to the field of obligation, no man on earth has a right to censure. Hazrat Rasulullah Kareem sallallahu alaihi wa sallam was once asked by a visitor, tell me about Islam. He, in reply, told him the fundamentals of Islam and also started telling him of the acts of volition later on, of good acts which pertain to the region of Nawafil. So he said, look here, I will do just that which is obligatory and nothing more. So will I be forgiven? So he said, yes, that will suffice you. So that is the minimum which is required. Now if somebody falls below the minimum, then of course he comes under the censure, again of Allah, not of human being. It is only for them to admonish him with kindness. But
still he can be admonished. But those who remain within that sphere and don't transgress in any way the dictates of Islam, nobody has a right to speak harshly to them. So if some of the murabbis, some of the missionaries are living a decent life, nobody knows what else are the resources they have, their command, they have access to. Maybe Allah has provided them with money from some resources which they do not want to reveal. So as long as you do not come upon some positive charge of mistrust, of misuse of money, nobody has a right to say that, look, such and such person is living decently and he has no right to. Why not? Allah tells he has created these things for the sake of true believers. Here they are shared by the rest, but in the hereafter they would be exclusively for the believers. Now, another point is that you should be mindful of your duties to the Amir and other office bearers of the community. The Amir and the other office bearers exercise such power on behalf of Khilafat, on behalf of the institution of Khilafat, which is finally responsible for the entire organization of the community. So in this capacity, as workers of the organization, they draw their respective rights and prerogatives from the institution of Khilafat. They are different in different tiers. Sometimes by not understanding or by not knowing the rights of particular office bearers and limitations of their rights, so many problems crop up. People do not know their rights and do not know the rights of those who have been appointed in certain official capacity. So this is a very important thing that the Jamaat of England must make it known to every Ahmadi what are the limitations of these office bearers and what are their rights and obligations and what are the limitations of those on whom they are appointed as Amir or as President or in whatever capacity they are appointed. If you know clearly your rights and your limitations, then there is very little chance of somebody creating misunderstanding and sowing the seed of discord. Mostly it is ignorance that these things spread. Darkness and ignorance are one and the same thing. Knowledge is light. So first of all, light should be spread in this area. Everybody should begin to see his path. Then there is very little chance of coming into clash with each other or running into anybody, because with seeing eyes, only very reckless people do that. That happens, of course, even then, but very rarely. People with normal balance of mind do not run into each other while they are seeing things. So the whole Jamaat should be apprised of their rights according to the best traditions of Ahmadiyya and the rights of their superiors in administration. Superiors in administration, I repeat, because those who have not been involved in administration, they could be much more superior to those who are involved in administration in the eyes of Allah. Because it's a matter of heart and a matter of fear of Allah and a matter of taqwa where real superiority lies. So only in this context I'm saying who are superior to those or placed higher to those in the ladder of administration. Now some rights I must speak upon now and here. Number one, if an Amir has made a mistake and ordered you wrongly, if that order is not in clear violation of the Holy Quran, you should obey him. however wrong he may be, may appear to be to you. As I have made it very clear, if it is not in clear violation of the Holy Quran, you must obey him. If it is a difference of opinion regarding a particular work of the Holy Quran, and only interpretations differ, even then you should obey him. Because it is not for you to choose the interpretation and using that excuse to disobey your Ummah. Hazrat Rasool Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam laid so much stress upon the obedience of Ummah that people got surprised. They said, Huzoor Akram, if somebody is like that, even then we should follow him. He said, yes, even then. If somebody is like that, even then we should follow him. He said, yes, even then. At last, Huzoor sallallahu alayhi wa sallam retorted by saying that even if a black slave is appointed Amir over you, whose head is like the head of a munakha, resin, you know, a piece of resin, even then you must obey. Now these were the two things which irritated the Arab mind, which could irritate the Arab mind. One, to obey an ajami, and coming from an area which was known to be the area of black people. Arabs of those days considered it to be a personal insult to follow such a people. And on top of that, they being slaves. Slaves and blacks, all together, you know, both things together, made it abhorrent to the Arabs to accept them as their leaders. Secondly, to have a big head was a sign of qiyadat, of leadership and wisdom. So the Arabs took pride in having big heads because that was a sign of great wisdom. And it was understood that the smaller the head be, the stupider and fooler the man would be. More fool if he has a small head. So Hazrat Rasool Akram sallallahu alayhi wa sallam brought these two points of abhorrence together and said, if he is a slave belonging to an area where the color is black, and also if his head is so small that there seems to be no brain in him at all, if he is appointed an Amir, you follow him. Then came another aspect of the same situation. That was, if somebody is leading you in prayer. Some people are detective-minded. They sniff things, and they think that they have got information on one's personal life much more than the rest of the community does, with the result that they sit like judges over the characters of certain other families. They say, we know them, they are bad. Whether they have evidence enough or not, whether they pursue their allegations in the proper manner of producing evidence according to the Islamic dictates or not, they are not concerned. The only position they take is that we know such person is a bad character, so he should not hold any office. Particularly, they take exception to his becoming imam in the salat. So such a question was also raised at the time of Hazrat Muhammad Mustafa sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and decided for all times to come. If the question was that if somebody is badkar, somebody is vicious person, a vile person, and thoroughly bad in character, if he is appointed as Imam al-Salat, you know how abhorring it may appear to some that such a person to be at antipodes with the righteousness should be made the leader of those who are righteous people and standing in prayer, in congregation prayer before Allah. So they said, if such a person is made Imam Salat, what should the followers do? Hazur Akram sallallahu alayhi wa sallam told them that they should follow him. It is Allah who is to accept the prayer. He will be answerable for his deed and you will be answerable for your deed. If you follow such a man, because you follow the organization and discipline, Allah will accept your prayer, because it's not the Imam who is going to accept this prayer, it is Allah. What a beautiful teaching. How beautiful and peaceful it is. This is why the name is Islam. It means peace. It spreads peace, it breeds peace, it dictates peace. No disorder is acceptable in Islam. So in this spirit, of Hazur Akram sallallahu alayhi wa sallam's teaching, you should follow the Amir and all other office bearers, regardless of whether you consider them to be inferior in taqwa or in righteousness. That is not for you to brag in this world. It is for Allah to decide after the death. Now I come to the responsibilities of Amir. They have their obligations. The office bearers have their obligations too. They must be kindly towards the people on whom they have been appointed. Not to rule, I can say, I can't use that word, but to run in the administration. They follow him, the Amir, only for the sake of Allah, not in his personal capacity. And to make it more particular, of course, ultimate end is to please Allah and nothing else. But to make particular, they follow the Amir because he has been appointed by Khalifatul Masih, for no other reason. They follow the entire system of organization because that system has been approved by Khalifatul Masih. They have not accepted that, or they have not taken oath of allegiance to every emir. They have only taken oath of allegiance at the hands of Khalifatul Masih. So everything gets concentrated in his hand, and then from it, it emanates in all directions. And as long as it is coming from him, Ahmadis follow it, because it is an article of their faith that he is appointed by Allah. So as I have said, ultimately, their obedience is to Allah and not to a single person or a human being. So this is the entire system in a nutshell. So because they do it, because they have got delegated power from Khalifatul Masih, they must not misuse their delegated power. I should abhor to appoint an Amir who is unkind to Ahmadi, because Khilafat has a direct relationship with all Ahmadis. They are made to obey not because they are made to feel inferior, but only to keep order. For nothing, no other reason at all. But order does not mean harshness and unkindness. I should not feel safe myself in the hands of any Amir who does not behave like I should love to behave toward other Ahmadis. So this must not happen. No missionary in charge, no president should misuse these powers, because when they hurt those Ahmadis and they obey them despite being hurt only for the sake of Allah, they'll be hurting me and they'll be going away from the cause path of Allah. So it's a very serious affair. You must keep this trust intact and try to behave like Hazrat Muhammad Mustafa sallallahu alayhi wa sallam behaved towards his followers. No more supreme authority, more supreme than Hazrat Akram sallallahu alayhi wa sallam can be conceived in this earth. In this world, it's impossible to conceive of a person with greater authority, because he was representing Allah in all consummation. No one had ever represented Allah before like Hazur Akram sallallahu alayhi wa sallam did. So if some people object to Islamic way of organization as dictatorial, no one on earth could claim such dictatorial power in the worldly terms as Noor e Aqram sallallahu alaihi wasallam assumed after the Prophethood. But there is no dictatorship in Islam. Greater the power or concentration of power, more fearful is the of it, because everybody is ultimately answerable to Allah. With the result that that fear intensifies, the greater your power increases. So Huzur e Akram sallallahu alaihi wa sallam used that power in the humblest manner, in such beautiful and attractive manner that all through his life you can't pinpoint a single occasion where anybody on earth could call that occasion to be an exhibition of dictatorship. He ruled through wisdom, he ruled through prudence, he ruled through love. And if you rule with these three factors, then it's impossible for dictatorship to come into the picture. It has nothing to do with prudence, dictatorship has not, nor with wisdom, nor with love. It doesn't belong here. So this is the sort of administrative power which is devolved on all Ahmadis serving in any capacity. So they must be very wary that they should keep the honor of this trust alive and intact, and must not misuse it in any way. If these two aspects are attended, then most of the problems automatically dissolve into thin air, as if they had never been. This is the ideal society which Jamaat Ahmadiyya is endeavoring to create. And towards this end, you must put in all your endeavors. Now, when something happens, despite everything, despite the best atmosphere, things do happen. Things of friction, born out of misbehavior or misconduct by anybody, or a wrong bent of mind, for example. What should one do? That is the third point which I want to make clear. If you disagree with any officer in the community, then it is your first right, not only right, it is your duty to report this matter to the center and report it through that particular officer concerned. Now, if you fear that he will not forward that report to the center in due time, what you can do is send a copy direct to the center. Now here I must tell you that as far as the relationship between every Ahmadi and Khalifatul Masih is concerned, anybody can write any number of letters to Khalifatul Masih directly. There is no procedure involved at all in any way. But when you speak of somebody else in censuring terms, then according to the teachings of Islam, it is obligatory upon you to let him know. Otherwise, it would be rebirth. It would be just painting him black one-sidedly without him knowing it. So this is why this procedure is involved. Otherwise, nobody stands between Khalifatul Masih and Ahmadiyya. They are one and the same thing. It's impossible for anybody to interfere and stand in the way. So it also reminds me that if the officials of Jamaat are misbehaving in any way to others, they actually stand in the way of Khalifat al-Masih and the Jamaat. Because sometimes some people, when they are angry with their local officers, they cannot make fine distinctions between him and the authority which they were usurping or misusing. And many of them have not no opportunity to reach directly the Khilafat and plead their case as they should, with the result that they think that this is the representation of Jamaat, and ultimately they fall out with the Khalifa as well. So as I told you, they are standing in the way of Khalifatul Masih and the people, Ahmadiyya people, which they have no right to do. So the answer to this problem, if it occurs, is this, that you write direct to Khalifatul Masih or to the office concerned. For example, if it's the financial matter, you could write to the Wakilul Mal. If it is a matter concerning Tafsheer, you could write to Wakilul Tafsheer. But if someone is not satisfied at that, he could directly write to me in this capacity of Khalifatul Masih and send a copy to the Amir if they are very hasty. This is the minimum they are expected to do. But otherwise, the normal course is to direct their application and complaint through the channel of Amir or the officer concerned, whoever he be, and send a copy direct. That would be better. So no problem is left at all. But one thing I must remind you, the court of appeal is in the higher direction, even in the worldly affairs, not in the lower direction. Those Ahmadis who make the mistake of appealing to the masses for the wrong done to them have always been annihilated by Allah. They have been destroyed. Nothing is left of them. Because instead of going to Allah, they went to the masses. While no religion springs from the masses, it comes down from Allah. So instead of sending your appeal to the right direction, if you go to the wrong direction, and by doing so, also damage the system and the fabric of the community by making one-sided propaganda of which the other party has no opportunity to defend. So the party even sometimes does not know what is happening and what is being talked about against him. So one-sided propaganda, number one, is forbidden in Islam positively in the Holy Quran. Whether it be against an Amir or an office bearer or an ordinary Ahmadi, it is very strictly forbidden. But if it is directed against the representatives of the organization, then it's doubly evil, because it hurts the devotion of Ahmadi. It injures their devotion. And they become less active Ahmadis under the influence of such propaganda. So what are they trying to achieve? What do they want to hurt? Hurt the cause of Ahmadiyya? Take their revenge, even if they are rightful, to take revenge, their personal revenge from Ahmadiyya and the spirit of Ahmadiyya? This will not do. It has never been successful in the history of Ahmadiyya. Such people have always been chucked out by Allah, without regard to whether in the initial place they were right or wrong. The method they adopted was positively wrong and injurious, and they are punished for this method. But if you appeal to the higher authority, and the highest authority is Allah, why not have him? If he is a live Allah, if he is a real being, then he is the last and final authority and the supreme authority. If he is not a real being, if he is just imaginary and a mythical person, then just leave this organization. Why to get stuck to such a stupid organization which is believing in nothing and laying all store by nothing? So this is a simple answer to this question. Instead of censuring such community and injuring those who believe, you should simply say Assalamu Alaikum and leave them alone. But if the fundamental concept of every religion is Allah and His existence and His live interest in the affairs of men, then you must make the final appeal to Allah. If even Khalifa doesn't listen to your way of thinking or your complaints and doesn't agree, and you still insist that he is taking sides with the administration unduly, Allah's court is the final appeal. And what is a Khalifa? Nothing compared to Allah. Not even a speck on earth. He can be annihilated by one word of Allah if he so chooses. So when you have access to the highest and the most powerful cause, to abandon that and to go down to the masses and start talking among them, if it is not idolatry, pure and simple, what else it is? This is idolatry. This is the proof that you do not believe in the existence of Allah. You are only following some form and nothing else. So be mindful of this behavior. If you behave correctly in this sense, Allah will show mercy upon you. You will create the most ideal society, which will be flourishing and which would be expanding, which will be gaining power in every direction. And nobody would be able to suppress such a society. Now, it was pointed out to me by some friends that in the first sermon I was rather too harsh and one-sidedly harsh upon the members of my family, the family I belong to. And I singled them out by saying that if they borrow money from somebody, if they try to borrow money, everybody should take precautions. And I pointed out to them that it is a grave responsibility to behave cleanly and above board in financial matters. Otherwise, it is Hazrat Masih Maud Rasulullah's name and honor which is sometimes defiled by those who are hurt. I said, did it. Not because I was not aware of other people doing it, but because I know the process of Islam doesn't just say that charity begins at home. I tell you that it should begin at home. This is why Hazrat Muhammad Mustafa sallallahu alayhi wa sallam was told in the beginning of his office, Anzir ashirataka wal akrabeen. You give warning to your second kin who are closest to you. The process of warning from his own family people. And then it was that he went to the top of a hill and addressed the whole of the rest of the Makkah. So I was not unaware of these things. Only I was following the dictates of the Holy Quran and following the policy as laid down by the Holy Quran. As far as these financial discrepancies and misbehavior is concerned, I lay great importance to such things, because a society without adl cannot flourish, cannot go on to the next higher stages. It's impossible. It will remain in a state of decay and will never be able to prosper. So those small things which tilt the balance of Islamic culture and Islamic society in the favor of the worldly affairs, that society is unhealthy society. It is like a society, for example, if we give the quote to illustrate the matter by quoting the example of a single person, I should say, a society like somebody who is suffering from high blood pressure or low blood pressure or too much urination, too highly sensitive and active kidneys, and so on and so forth. So any unhealthy person is incapable of achieving anything in life. If the health is bad in small respects, to that respect he is hindered from taking pursuits, healthy pursuit of life. But if the injury is more, is incapacitated in more ways than one, then sometimes these people become bedridden. So health is highly important before you can think of breaking the world record. And you are made for breaking world record. This is your position. This is your station in life. So no unhealthy symptoms should be tolerated, however small. Even the world athlete in 100 meters, if he is suffering from headache, can perhaps be beaten by his number 10. to create that health, restore that health in the Ahmadiyya society, and then you will see, inshallah ta'ala, that you will be able to pursue your noble goals much faster and more actively and rigorously. For that, I have in mind to form a commission here. And already I'm thinking of certain names, inshallah, I'll declare that before I leave. A commission to go into the financial discrepancies pertaining to people living in England or to people who have left England, and either they are targets of these discrepancies or dishonesty, or they made English people living in England, targets of their dishonesty. Whatever the case be, this commission will collect all these complaints and report to me about the procedure if they should adopt. Similarly, there are reports of marriage dissolution or misbehavior by husband to wife or wife to husband, ultimately resulting into marriage dissolution. While we are preaching to this world that Islamic way of family life is the best and has the best example to be followed, and we at the same time contradict our word by our action, this is doing injustice to Islam, so that should not do either. For that, I request the Board of Qaza to expedite all such cases which are still pending. Now, once the Qaza has decided, execution must not linger behind. Because if you linger in execution of your decision, then you destroy the whole system of justice. It is not for those who are appointed to execute decisions to show mercy or kindness to some party. It is not their right to judge over the judgment of the Qazi. If it is wrong and you 100% believe it to be wrong, even then, it is your prime responsibility to execute that. Because the responsibility would fall on their shoulder of their wrong judgment, not on your shoulder. They would be answerable to Allah, not you. So, the execution must be highly efficient. And I should not tolerate any delay, conscious or otherwise, in execution. But give them the due rights of appeal according to traditions of the community or the scenes of the community. If somebody has a right to appeal to a higher board, why not? Let him. But what I mean to say is that if an appeal is not lodged with the higher board, or if the higher board has ultimately decided against such a party, or if the higher board lies here in England and there is no such appeal against them, whatever the system be, I am not aware of that. But once it is decided, execution must not be delayed, because that would be delaying justice to the party. And in the end, as I take leave, I remind you to pray for me and for my journey back home. May Allah make it successful and guard over us, myself and all my companions. Leave taking is sad indeed, there is no doubt about it. But responsibility stands superior to these emotional affairs. Also, going back has its own demand. There are such loving Ahmadis there, such devoted Ahmadis, that it's impossible to make preferences of one section of Ahmadis over another section. So it's a strange world in which we find today. Not even today, I mean a strange world in which ever a man has found himself. That leave-taking is also sad, But going, leave-taking also becomes a must. And it has also an element of pleasure too, because that sorrow, if turned into prayer, also gives you a sort of satisfaction and a sense of achievement. It's a very complex affair. It's impossible for me to describe how I feel. Nor perhaps it is possible for you to describe how you feel. But this is life. This is the scheme of things by Allah. We must accept it. So as I will leave with a sad and heavy heart, turning that emotional sorrow into prayers for you, I request you to do the same for me. Because altogether, you and me, that is one Ahmadiyyat, and there is no distinction there in any way. And if you pray for Ahmadiyyat, we'll be praying for Islam, for the cause of Allah, in fact. We must create a society of greater love, greater understanding, greater sacrifice, not only for the sake of Allah, but for also for each other. By doing so, we'll be adding strength to Ahmadiyyat. May Allah help us achieve the noble goals He has set for us. As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullah. الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونؤمن به ونتوكل عليه ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا ومن يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلله فلا هادي له ونشهد ان لا اله الا الله وحده لا شريك له ونشهد ان محمدا عبده ورسوله عباد الله رحمكم الله إن الله يأمر بالعدل والإحسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر والبغي يعظكم لعلكم تذكرون اذكروا الله يذكركم وادعوه يستجب لكم ولذكر الله